The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Too many people settle for average because they feel that it's too difficult to go beyond average to exceptional. The tools are all there, but people don't realize the small amount of extra effort that is needed to reap big rewards. Welcome to Step Up and Play Big with Chris Ruisi. Chris and his guest experts are here to show you where the possibilities lie and what they can do to help you. Now, here is your host, Chris Ruisi.
Well, hello, everybody. It's me, Chris Ruisi, and I'm back. And welcome again to another episode of Step Up and Play Big with me. As I mentioned last week, the show has been specifically designed for those of you who want to step up and play big, which, by the way, is the title of my book, so that was some shameless promotion, and folks who want to do more with their business, their career, and life, and are willing to do more to achieve it. The stuff works when you work the stuff. All of our guests, in one way or another, have stepped up and played big, and their goal is to share with us their stories so that you can learn from their experiences. And today's guest is aptly qualified under that. Now, last week we had a great show with Colonel Greg Gatson about leadership and how to overcome adversity. I've received a ton of positive feedback on the show, and you can listen to the recorded version of it on my show page. With today's show, I want to extend our winning streak with another great guest and topic. And as I mentioned last week, I would encourage you all to call in if you have a question. The number there is 1-866-472-5790. Or if you're bashful about hearing your voice on the radio, email me at chris@chrisruisi.com. So let's get to today's show. And I want to thank Kevin Horrigan for joining us. Kevin is an adept entrepreneur and has led his web design and web development firm, Bayshore Solutions, based in Tampa, through the brink of the dot-com meltdown in the early 2000s to today's high-energy, high-performance digital marketing agency known today, as I said, as Bayshore Solutions. By continually applying lessons and successes learned, Kevin has piloted Bayshore Solutions to earn an impressive roster of clients, almost all stars in American business, and help those companies grow significantly through web technology, strategic online marketing, and complementing the agency's corporate growth and customer success. Kevin and his team at Bayshore have earned significant national acclaim, including the Tampa Chamber of Commerce Business Leader of the Year in 2012, the American Advertising Federation Award in 2012 also is a Silver Medal Leader Award, the Tampa Bay Technology Forum Outstanding Leadership Award, and these awards go on and on, and we could almost take the whole show of just listing them. As a sought-after technology and marketing advisor to organizations, Kevin Horrigan has shared case stories and digital marketing growth strategies for businesses at a variety of conferences through the Tampa Bay Business Journal to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's Small Business Summit. In addition to his professional duties, Kevin previously has or currently serves on the board or committees for the CEO Council of Tampa Bay, the Tampa Bay Partnership, the Greater Tampa Bay Chamber of Commerce, the Lowry Park Zoo, the Tampa Bay Technology Forum, the American Marketing Association, and Tampa Bay Professional Alliance, and he has time to get on one of his two boats. So that makes us all pretty jealous about that. And for those of you who know me, I am a boat owner or was a boat owner. So, Kevin, welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you and your guests here today. And that introduction was far too long, and someone must have been fabricating something in there.
Well, your family asked me to write it, you know, so we got it there. Now, in full disclosure, Kevin and I do work together, but we're not going to treat him too easy today on the show. Kevin, we want to do is start really about the web and marketing. And I've got some questions here that I want to run through you, so I know you'll be able to answer them for us.
Sure.
The first one is, how should a company go about building a web strategy? Is it a one-year strategy, or should it span several years? And what factors should go into building it?
Well, Chris, it's a great question, and it's one that I'm asked all the time. But what should companies do when they're creating their web strategy? And I think first and foremost, people have to understand that their web strategy, as the vision we have today, will never end. And there's lots of reasons for that. First and foremost, in the digital landscape, technology is continuing to change and evolve. Secondly, we're able to view the internet with more and more different types of devices today. And thirdly, is our customer continues to change their behaviors in which they do research and learning more about the products and services that we offer. And so a static web strategy will have a very short shelf life, but a dynamic web strategy that understands who your target customer is, how they research your products or services on the internet, and how you can respond with the right forms of content in the right locations on the internet with that content for your consumer to get more interested and more accelerated with their desires to want to own your product is kind of the foundation of how you start to build a web strategy. And you have to reevaluate that often, one, because of the changings of technologies and research patterns, but also just in being able to measure what's currently being effective in your web strategy and what's not being effective and how to realign resources and dollars to the what's working category and move them away from the what's not working category.
Let me interrupt for a second, Kevin, on two points. Number one is, how important is knowing who your ideal customer is point number one? And number two is, how often should a company be evaluating its strategy?
So, and the first question, how important is it knowing who your target audience is? Well, it's incredibly important. And I'll quote a retailer from 1919 named John Wanamaker who once said in 1919 that, "I know 50% of my advertising's working. I just don't know what 50%. And here we are almost a century later. We are 5 years less than a century away from that statement, and yet many advertisers today still don't have any more clarity as to what advertising's working. And some of that is they just don't really know who their target customer is and where their target customer is spending their time and where to create the right advertising in front of that target customer. So when you don't understand who your target customer is, your ability to create effective advertising is limited because you really don't know where to advertise. Then you don't know what to advertise. And so you're likely to be one of those who will know some of your advertising's working. You just don't know what some it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then how important is it in frequency to revisit the strategy? I think it's at least twice a year, if not every quarter. And the purpose of that is multifold, but one of them is we keep getting new areas on the internet where people can continue to do research. New blogs are created daily, and those blogs may be reviewing the products or services that you offer. There are new white papers coming out, but there's places where people are getting an opportunity to learn more about your product or service. That's where potentially you should be advertising. The other thing that changes all the time is your competition and what their approach is. And for most companies, their opportunity to be effective on the internet isn't about selling more through making the world buy more. It's from taking market share away from the already existing buyers and taking market share away from their competition. And you constantly have to understand what your competition is doing if you're going to try to take that market share. And that's why at least twice a year, if not quarterly and even monthly, should you be evaluating what's working and what's not.
Okay. Now, every strategy, needs goals, obviously. How do you advise your clients on setting these goals and what factors they should use to measure their progress?
Sure. It's a great question, Chris. And I think what's really important is establishing truly what the right benchmarks are. And so as I consult with companies that we may work with, typically their first requests is we want a new website because our current one is old and outdated. Or another request is we want more traffic to our website, or we want to rank better in the search engines, or we want to be better at social media. And you might be able to increase traffic and not really get the job done that the customer is looking for. You may be able to redesign your website and not really be able to get what you want. So it's really important to understand what the goals are. And when you really drill down to understand what a company's goals of their web strategy is, it's typically they want to sell more. And what they share with what most people think their limitation to selling more is because their website's old and outdated in look, or they don't rank well in the search engines, or they don't get a lot of traffic. But curing just a fresher looking website or adding more traffic to the website does not necessarily equal more revenue. And so it's important to understand what the real benchmarks are. And I would say 9 out of 10 times the real answer is an increase in revenue.
Okay. And how do you walk your clients through that process, Kevin?
Well, first and foremost, the most important thing probably in your whole web strategy is your website itself. Most people's interest in researching a product or service will finish within your website. It may not start there. It may start with a blog that they read. It may start with an email that they received. It may start with a search that the search result they see within Google. But whether it be the email campaign or a blog or a search within the search engines, usually those are driven to the website. And so you want to make sure your website, as is the core of your digital strategy, is the best it can possibly be. And best sometimes can be measured is the highest percentage of visitors take an action to contact you back via phone or form of submission or chat. But effective websites is where it starts, and then marketing campaigns around that effective website would be the second step.
Okay. When a company comes to you to redesign their website, since we've been talking about that, what pre-work do you recommend that they do to maximize their time and money investment?
Sure. So, you know, first and foremost, it really goes back to is it's not so important for me to understand my customer as much as it's important for me to understand my customer's customer. And so, you know, the foundation of building a website is who is the target audience, or in most cases, it's audiences. And what does that target audience need to experience on a website to accelerate their interest in wanting to do business with that company? And so getting the profiles of the different target audiences is important. And then different audiences have different journeys as to what they may need to do to want to engage with that company. For example, we could take an auto dealer as an example. Some people are going to a website because they want to buy a new car. Some are looking to buy a used car. Some are looking for service. Some are looking for parts. One message does not engage all four of those different consumer types the same way. We could pick on a department retailer. They have a men's department and a women's department. And Chris, I'm not sure how compelling content would be if you were to get some email campaigns about women's high heels as much as it may be men's polo shirts. And okay. So understanding your audience and making sure they're getting the right content, not generalized content, is really important in the first phase of understanding how to design a website.
How do you help your clients identify their ideal client?
So, you know, sometimes people know that answer and sometimes they don't. And so it's really understanding their current traffic patterns is one way, and understand who's coming to the existing website. So that can all be analyzed, and you can see the behavioral patterns of who's coming and what actions they're taking. So certainly you want to assess the current state of the union on how their current website's performing. That's one overview. If a website's been poorly done and doesn't have a lot of traffic, that data has a value, but not ultimately the value it could have later when it's going to be more effective. So interviewing who their top customers are and what their buying behaviors are, and how the website was an important factor in their buying experience, in asking the customers the answers to answer the questions has been another way of gathering that information. And certainly looking at the competition. How does my customer, or how does the owner of a website, want to differentiate themselves from the other websites out there? And the consumer today typically doesn't look at one website when they make a buying decision. They look at multiple. How do we know that when a prospective customer comes to our website that we've conveyed the message that they want to see and have the competitive differentiation to make them call us versus the other options they're going to have during their research phase?
Okay, great. We got a little bit about a minute or so left, Kevin. And what we want to just tell everybody, what we've been doing, in case you've joined us late, is we've been talking with Kevin Horrigan, CEO of Bayshore Solutions. And we've been talking about the strategy you follow, the steps you follow to build your web strategy, the factors that need to go into creating the strategy, how to identify your ideal client and track that, how often you should track and evaluate your strategy. It's a very, very critical area in any company who wants to play with the big kids on the web. Now, when we come back from our break, We're going to talk about budget, Kevin. I want to talk about the factors that folks need to take to go into creating a realistic budget to get the biggest bang for their buck. And I want to talk more about some of the biggest challenges you think are facing companies in today's environment. So we'll be back in a bit, everybody.
Great.
Always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now toll free 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Make sure to order your copy today of Step Up and Play Big, where Chris Ruisi coaches you on how to create a future vision, make better decisions, develop effective business habits, and find out what it means to be a leader by identifying and solving problems to drive you and your organization to top performance levels. This book is a must-read for all business leaders. Find out how to get your own copy of the book on Amazon.com or by visiting ChrisRuisi.com and clicking the book. Many leaders and companies work with Chris Ruisi. As a business mentor, Chris helps to guide these leaders and companies to bigger results and puts them on the road to success. If you are looking to step into a bigger role in your organization, email Chris today to learn how you can be exceptional with less effort than you think. You can send an email to Chris at ChrisRuisi.com, or you can visit the website to find out where Chris will be appearing next, coaching, and his books. Visit ChrisRuisi.com to step up and play big.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to Step Up and Play Big with Chris Ruisi. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd like to send us an email, please send it to Chris at ChrisRuisi.com. Now, back to Step Up and Play Big.
Well, hello again, everybody. This is Chris Ruisi, and welcome back to our second segment of the show. My guest today is Kevin Horrigan, who's president and CEO of Tampa-based Bayshore Solutions, a leader in the internet web marketing arena in today's environment. We've been talking about the importance of a web strategy and how that strategy needs to span maybe several years as opposed to one, the importance of the ideal customer, the importance of buying trends, things of that nature, and creating the strategy, as well as how often a company should look at their strategy, evaluate it, and take action. Kevin suggested maybe twice a year or at least once a quarter. Bayshore Solutions, again, is Tampa-based, and as I mentioned earlier, I work with Kevin, and I get to go there once a month, which is really pretty cool to get out of this cold weather. For those of you who want some information about me, again, my website is ChrisRuisi.com, and I urge you to visit it to see what's going on there. We have lots of information to help you achieve more because most people play below their success bar, and my goal is to challenge you to challenge yourself. So now we're going to get back with Kevin, and we're going to talk about budget because everybody needs to understand what they're investing both in time and money in order to get the biggest bang for it. So, Kevin, welcome back. And what factors does a company need to take into account in creating a realistic but yet effective budget?
Sure, sure. And budget's one of those questions that people don't like the first answer I give, and the answer is it depends. And
yeah, I don't like that answer either.
No,
but
nobody,
all right, go ahead.
Nobody seems to, but you know the answer behind the it depends answer is what's the website expected to do to generate the goals? And we talked about in the prior session, Chris. We talked about the most goals are typically about revenue growth, and so, you know, the budget, if it can be attached to revenue growth, the budget conversation can become very, very simple instead of being very complex. Just many people don't understand how to determine what the real budget should be, but most companies would say that if my budget could be X% of my revenue from the website, then that would be wonderful. Let's call it 2%, 5%, 10%. If I spent $100,000 a year and generated $1 million in sales, then that's a 10% budget. Or my budget is 10% of my revenue. Or let's say it's 5%. But if you can determine what the website may be able to perform from a results perspective and work your way backwards to what percent of those results you would apply to a budget and then have a strategy and a plan that matches those, that would be one way to go about a budgeting exercise that has the end in mind, and end being revenue. Now, obviously, that has to be measured and executed accurately, or there's a risk that you could not get that revenue. There's a risk you could exceed it. But that would be one way that I would encourage people to approach their budget, is not how much do I want to spend, but how much do I want to get back in return.
Okay. Now, the clients that you work with, maybe someone who comes to you for the first time, are they sophisticated enough to answer that type of question in terms of the percent that they want to get back in a return?
Typically not. So, you know, typically the question that I'm asked is, how much is this going to cost? And that's where the answer, it depends. But working with them, you try to find out, if the website was to celebrate, the web strategy was to celebrate a year anniversary right now, what changed in your business? And when you ask that question, you start to understand that that meant that their phones were ringing and that their people were coming into their office, or their e-commerce solution was generating more sales. And so typically when you talk about budgets and you can really ask what the end goal is, you can start to build a budget based on what you're determining you want the outcome to be. If you pursue it the other way and say, I want to spend X, it would be another approach. At the end of the day, you don't know if X is the right amount until you really understand what you want to get in return for investment of what that X is going to be. And when people don't know what they're going to get in return, they often make their risk smaller. So if you don't know what your budget should be and you don't know what you're going to get in return, you're going to pick a lesser number than you would if you knew what you were going to get in return, because it creates less risk. So I think it's really important when you ask the budget question, it's not how much you're going to spend, but it's how much you're going to get back in return, and then find a spend that's comfortable for you with that goal of what's in return, and then manage your staff or your partners to create a strategy and work a plan and measure themselves to that plan, create accountability to that plan, and make any adjustments to plan as see fit. But I think it's more important to understand what the end game is than to understand what the upfront cost might be.
All right. Now, we've been talking about budget in terms of dollars, which is critically important. How do you explain to your clients the time commitment and resource commitment they have to make when they embark upon a brand new website design and strategy?
Sure. So I think one of the most difficult parts about developing a website and time consuming is the content that's going to be on the website. And so, I repeat this phrase every day of my career, Chris: beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So designing a beautiful website is something very subjective, but that process can typically take 30 days in designing a website. Developing a website, probably another 30 more to 60 more days. Creating the content for the website is a never-ending process. And when someone's redeveloping their website, usually their existing content is not what they think is going to be the content they want for their new website. And that typically takes at least 30 to 90 days to go through that part. And that may just be the typewritten content for the website. But today we have to view content beyond just typewritten content. We also have to consider video to support those who would rather watch and learn than as opposed to read and learn. We have white papers. We have blogs. We have what we refer to as infographics, which are illustrations or diagrams of a company's product overview or competitive differentiation in the form of a graphic, that all are elements of a website having a higher conversion rate of interest than just having typewritten content. So as people are preparing for going through the website process, certainly designing and developing it is one component, and I would say that's half of it. Creating the effective copy is the other half, and I don't think most people understand how large of a task the creation of content can become.
Now, do you assist clients if they can't handle that in creating content?
Absolutely. You know, what we do with our customers is we claim to be, we claim that our or we're digital experts. And so, you know, when it comes to the web, we are experts and have been doing this for more than 18 years, but we don't claim to be industry experts of what our customers do. So we're not experts in women's fashion. We're not experts in financial services. We're not experts in insurance. We're experts in digital skills. And we partner with our customers to take their subject matter expertise and let's call it financial services, and our web expertise, and partner together to create the right copy. They're showcasing their subject matter expertise. We showcasing it. How can it be portrayed on the internet?
What instructions or advice do you give a client, Kevin, as to what they should tell their team about a project of this nature right before they embark it, so they've picked the right people to be on the team?
Sure, and that's a great question. So, you know, most companies go through the web design process, I would guess, maybe every 3 years. And most people who are on the web team at the company, it's not their only job. And so when a company is selecting who's going to be on their web team, they certainly need the subject matter experts to be able to create the content that's going to showcase this company as having the expertise that's necessary to convince the customer to reach out to them. But they're going to have some people beyond the subject matter experts, some people who have an understanding of marketing would be important, maybe some technology, but I think most important is the subject matter experts and the marketing team being able to collaborate together to be able to bring the right message with the right expertise and the right marketing flair at the same time.
Okay, I want to go back on content from a couple of points of view. Which is less best in terms of content, or is it really the quality of the content and the message you want to get out?
So, Chris, there's an old saying in our industry that content is king, and we've been saying that for a decade, if not more. And I don't think, of all the things that change in the digital landscape so frequently, I don't think that's changed. Content is king. I also say content is queen. It's prince and princess. It's incredibly important. But everybody absorbs content differently, and we spoke just a few moments ago of beauty's in the eye of the beholder. Well, I think content is in the eyes of the beholder, too. Some people want to read, and having white papers and blogs gets them educated, and they enjoy the reading. Others want nothing to do with that and would rather watch a video to get educated, and others may want to hear it in the form of a podcast in their commute to and from work every day. And so we as website owners need to be able to create different forms of content in different ways of which our audience wants to engage with it. And so there's a belief that less is more in web page copy to a degree, with an opportunity to get more, usually in the form of white papers or blogs or reviews. But the web pages in itself, typically today, they're shorter, more simple, but with more options for detail versus in prior years, the web page containing all of the information within one web page.
All right. Now, what do you do with a client who provides content that he or she likes but is not relevant to the ideal customer they want to attract?
Sure. And so, you know, as we've been teasing here, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. And there's an old saying in the advertising industry that typically the worst person within a company to build their brochure, and you view today a website as a form of a company's brochure,
sure,
the worst person in a company to do that is the chief executive officer. Because the chief executive officer typically has a way that they want to portray their company, but the buying audience has a different way in which it wants to perceive that company. And so, unfortunately, there's times where people have created a message that they are passionate about for their website, which isn't actually the message that the consumer wants to read. And you can see that being measured in a way where they may have a lot of web page views, but their conversion rate of those web page views to inquiries via a telephone call, or maybe they submit a form off the website, or maybe the website has online chat, or maybe it has e-commerce you can buy online. You see that those websites don't have a high conversion rate, and you typically think there's one of two things broke. Either one, the design was not beauty in the eyes of the beholders, or two, the copy is not the right copy, or a combination of each. And so in those particular cases, instead of getting into what I refer to as an arm wrestling match with my customer who's passionate, they've got the perfect copy and we have a different message, we create A-B testing. And we let our customers' copy stay on particular pages, and we create alternative layouts and copy on those same pages. And as people come to the website, one customer sent to version A, and the next customer sent to version B. And that goes back and forth for a matter of 30 or 45 days. And at the end of the day, the subjective argument of whose content is better or not is quantitatively measured by the A-B testing, and whichever web pages had a higher conversion rate are typically the ones that you would say you'd want to continue to work with.
And okay. Hold on, Kevin. We're coming up on break. So what I want to do is end it here. I want to come back on content and talk about how important it is to update it.
Sure.
All righty. Let's take the break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Many leaders and companies work with Chris Ruisi. As a business mentor, Chris helps to guide these leaders and companies to bigger results and puts them on the road to success. If you are looking to step into a bigger role in your organization, email Chris today to learn how you can be exceptional with less effort than you think. You can send an email to Chris at chrisruisi.com, or you can visit the website to find out where Chris will be appearing next, coaching, and his books. Visit chrisruisi.com to step up and play big. Make sure to order your copy today of Step Up and Play Big, where Chris Ruisi coaches you on how to create a future vision, make better decisions, develop effective business habits, and find out what it means to be a leader by identifying and solving problems to drive you and your organization to top performance levels. This book is a must-read for all business leaders. Find out how to get your own copy of the book on Amazon.com or by visiting chrisruisi.com and clicking the book.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to Step Up and Play Big with Chris Ruisi. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd like to send us an email, please send it to Chris at chrisruisi.com. Now, back to Step Up and Play Big.
Okay, we're back. It's Chris Ruisi again with Kevin Horrigan, CEO of Bayshore Solutions. And we spent a fair amount of time in the last segment on content, the importance of it. And I want to get back on that with Kevin. And a lot of folks work real hard, Kevin, in creating content when they redesign their website, all brand new content. It's shiny new. It's sparkly clean. But then they forget to update it periodically. Tell me what that does to the investment they made in their brand new website.
Sure. Well, it's not a good use of their new investment by not publishing fresh content frequently, and there's many reasons why. First and foremost, many companies find one of the most effective ways of generating traffic to their website is through the search engines. And one of the important things to the search engines is how frequently does companies' websites get maintained and updated. And as a search engine crawls a website, it can look to see the last time the website was updated and what was updated. And there's many, many reasons why websites rank higher than others, but one of them is the frequency and quality of content. And websites that don't have frequent updates are going to fall low on that score, and websites that do will have a higher ranking. So first and foremost, it's an opportunity to create more traffic to your website. Secondly, once people get to your website, most content can sometimes be time-stamped. We have press releases that go on our website. There's usually a date published with that. We have announcements. We have events, things of this nature. There's usually dates published. Websites whose dates have expired and are still live on the website reflect very poorly upon the consumer. And thirdly is obviously our customer or prospective customer is looking at more than just our website, and it's going to be very obvious in their research process which websites are being maintained with fresh copy that's relative and which ones that aren't, and that lets the consumer then make a decision as to the quality of your products or services just on the freshness and frequency of content. And it doesn't mean that the company who's not publishing good content is not as good of a company. It just means that's the opinion that the consumer had, which is an opportunity for a lost customer.
How often should content be updated, Kevin?
Sure. So, you know, we say at the very minimum 2 to 4 times a month. And most times what we try to encourage our clients is to just get into the habits. These are habits that can be formed. And habits that are good are hard to break, and habits that are bad are hard to break. Let's get into good copywriting habits. Suggestions for that. Weekly press releases. Something's happening within companies that we can create weekly press releases. There are opportunities for events. There are weekly blogs is another great opportunity to create a habit of rotating around your company responsibilities for people to write in their own terms something about your company's products or services, and a blog should be somewhere between 2 and 6 paragraphs. It shouldn't take long, and your team can have fun with the blog and publishing that. And these are different things that become weekly pieces of content that can keep your visitors seeing fresh, updated content and make them want to come back, as well as be appealing to the search engines.
Okay. You know, that was an interesting comment, and some of you folks last week enjoyed when I high-fived myself, and I'm doing it again, when Kevin talked about habits. When I work with clients in terms of coaching, we talk about a lot of habits, you know, what habits you have to learn, what habits you have to unlearn, because our habits define us. So if you're not keeping your content up, if you're not in the habit of updating content and providing new content, you're allowing your company to be defined in a way which is less than desirable. Kevin, let's talk about for a second here what you believe are the two biggest web challenges facing companies, and what do you recommend that they do about it?
Sure. So that's a great question, Chris. So here at Bayshore Solutions, I think the two priorities that we're working with our current customers and our prospective customers, the two biggest challenges are, one, the customer today is equipped with so many different devices to access web pages. How does your website, what is your website experience on a smartphone? What is your website experience on a tablet? And what is your experience on a desktop computer? And with the diversity of those different types of devices accessing our website, if the answer isn't excellent across all three, then we're limiting our opportunity to engage with many, many customers. A lot of visits may start from a smartphone, but future visits may be at a tablet or desktop level to learn more. We have to make sure that our websites look good across all devices. So that's one giant challenge. I think the second largest challenge is content related. In one, it's having the frequency of content being updated. Two, it's having lots of different versions of content, meaning typewritten text, meaning podcasts, meaning blogs, meaning video. It's creating all of that content. And then in addition to that content, it's not just what's on your website, but it's how you circulate your content or syndicate your content across other web properties besides your own website. And there's a huge opportunity today for companies to gain visibility if they can form the habits of content creation and publish that to their website. The next stage of that is syndicating that to other websites where the consumer may get visibility of your brand and only in those other destinations, and never know of your website unless they see your content being multi-purposed across many different web properties beyond just your website.
Okay, now, Kevin, if people wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best way to reach you via phone, email, and give us the URL for your website?
Sure. So Bayshore Solutions is found very simply at www.bayshoresolutions.com. And my email address is almost as simple. It is kevin@bayshoresolutions.com. And Chris, we have 3 offices throughout the United States. We're in Denver, Colorado, Miami, Florida, and Tampa, Florida. And we can be reached by phone at 1-800-790-1199.
Great. We're going to switch gears now, and I want to talk about Kevin's leadership as a CEO of this company. And he took it over at probably the most noteworthy time within the internet.com era, and that was right around the bust of the bubble bust back in, 2000 or so, or maybe earlier?
2001, correct, yes.
Yep. Kevin, tell us what you did as the leader to guide Bayshore Solutions through that mess is the only way I can describe it, and how you found and capitalized on the opportunities that were hidden in the mess.
Sure, Chris. Well, you know, the dot-com bubble growing was an incredible roller coaster ride, and one that I don't foresee will ever relive in my career. But after the dot-com bubble, as a cliche says, popped, is when I had an opportunity to take over this company. And I think the most important lessons that I learned is, first and foremost, often when you're within a bubble, you don't know it until it's too late. And so, you know, our company was victim of growing incredibly quickly and didn't recognize that the market had outgrown what the real need was for it. But as we were trying to determine how we were going to survive through that, we had a very simple philosophy, and that is if we could survive, there'd be huge opportunity afterwards as being one of the companies who survived. And we kind of took a crawl, walk, run philosophy. We had to understand what our customers were willing to pay for that we had expertise for. And if we could find the skill sets that we had that our customers had a value for, there'd be an opportunity for us to be able to generate revenue and value back to our customers. And so we had to really consolidate and become experts at something and not be everything to everybody. And so that meant a constriction in our size, but it also meant an opportunity for our own survival and then what became future strength. And so it's really, what is our core? What are we going to say we're really good at? What are we going to be known we're really good at? And what's that that people are willing to pay for? And that was probably the entry point as to really turning the corner, is getting down to a core of who we were, what value we provided, and having a common mission, vision, values amongst our coworkers and that we could share with our potential customers.
Now, how hard was it, as you and your team did that back then, how hard was it to get to the core?
It was incredibly difficult. Everyone had a different opinion. We had 225 employees, and everyone had their own little level of expertise and their own little niche. And so there's a lot of different opinions in there. So that was one difficulty. Two, the dot-com bubble had just burst, and there really wasn't any, there weren't too many companies with funding to be able to invest in web strategy. So one was what we had skill sets, but the other one was what did the consumer base feel that they would want to invest in going forward. And so there was two large dilemmas there. One is we had lots of different expertises. Which were we going to focus on? And secondly is while we had many expertises and all had value up until then, what were the ones that really were going to be valuable to the customers going forward? And some of that was knowledge. Some of it may have been luck, but we just had to consolidate down to a core group of things that we felt that we would be able to provide a value for and were good at.
So in your role, you were, like, in essence, herding cats.
Yeah, I think I was an organizer. You know, I think I was really an organizer of great ideas, but the great ideas had to generate revenue for our company, too, and a value back to our customers. And so it was how to quantify those ideas that really would be able to be a value to our customers and revenue to our company. And that's where I think, you know, creating a mission, vision, and values are, because as these ideas were generated, we were able to create a mission, vision, and values, and we were inviting people to share their ideas, but they had to fall within the goalposts of the mission, vision, and values. And if an idea didn't have all three of those things considered, we didn't want it to be brought up yet. And then the other thing that we ask people to do is, as you're going to have ideas that meet our mission, vision, and values, also think this through. How does it affect people, process, and profit? And ideas that can meet our mission, vision, and values, as well as have thought through people, process, and profit, those were the ones that I would call slangly most cooked, and the ones that were given the most visibility to, and ultimately which became our core services.
Okay, so I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if I'm hearing what you're telling me, Kevin, what the audience is hearing, our listeners, what you did was you created the playing field and you set up the boundaries in terms of your mission and values, as well as people, process, and profit. And that's the playing field you established for your team to play on. And while they were on the field, they could maybe call an audible, take initiatives on their own.
Sure.
At the end of the day, if it didn't fall into the parameters you and your executive team established, it wasn't going to get much attention or time.
That's
is
correct.
That what you did as the CEO at that time?
Yeah, no, that's exactly well represented. And it was, you know, obviously difficult up front. People had great ideas. They just didn't have all of those things thoroughly thought through. And as leadership, we had to let them know that their idea was still good. It just needed more maturing and taking more of these things in consideration. And during that process, some had to self-select themselves out because they recognized that they didn't meet the mission, vision, and values, or when they've looked at people, process, profit, it didn't make sense to continue to mature that idea. Others may have thought it through. It just wasn't something that leadership was embracing and had to be told the difficult decision that we didn't think that was an idea that we were going to move forward with. But on the flip side is that's really what became our core, is listening to those ideas under the foundation of mission, vision, values, and people, process, profit that we were all able to gather around and take our company to go forward.
So then it's safe to say that if there were a different CEO at Bayshore Solutions during that time who didn't take the time to lay out the strategy, lay out the vision, you know, he probably would have been fighting more fires that he or she created than actually moving the company forward. My point is, if you don't have some kind of vision and some rules and some parameters, then, if, you know, buyer beware, you're looking for a fair amount of trouble.
That's correct.
In your organization.
Okay.
Good. What we're going to do now is we're getting close to the end of this segment. We've been talking with Kevin Horrigan. We've been talking about leadership, the critical role, and, you know, there is no such thing as a smooth-running company. So we're going to come back in a bit and talk more about what Kevin has done to lead Bayshore Solutions.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Make sure to order your copy today of Step Up and Play Big, where Chris Ruisi coaches you on how to create a future vision, make better decisions, develop effective business habits, and find out what it means to be a leader by identifying and solving problems to drive you and your organization to top performance levels. This book is a must-read for all business leaders. Find out how to get your own copy of the book on Amazon.com or by visiting ChrisRuisi.com and clicking the book. Many leaders and companies work with Chris Ruisi. As a business mentor, Chris helps to guide these leaders and companies to bigger results and puts them on the road to success. If you are looking to step into a bigger role in your organization, email Chris today to learn how you can be exceptional with less effort than you think. You can send an email to Chris at ChrisRuisi.com, or you can visit the website to find out where Chris will be appearing next, coaching, and his books. Visit ChrisRuisi.com to step up and play big.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Step Up and Play Big with Chris Ruisi. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd like to send us an email, please send it to Chris at ChrisRuisi.com. Now, back to Step Up and Play Big.
Okay, then, we're now in the final stretch with Kevin Horrigan, my guest, CEO of Tampa-based Bayshore Solutions. We've been talking about leadership. We've been talking about Kevin's leadership at a time when the company was subject to the big internet bubble burst. And leadership, by the way, here's another promotion, is an important aspect of my book, Step Up and Play Big, How to Be Exceptional, 8 Simple Steps. If you're not leading, then your team doesn't want to be successful. They rely upon you to lead, and that's what Kevin's been talking about. Kevin, let's jump in right here with what were the two most important lessons you learned from your experiences that you think are reflected into your leadership style today?
Sure. I think first and foremost, Chris, the first one is just focus. In you know the events of what we experienced in the dot-com bubble burst, distractions were incredibly abundant. And so trying to get focus, and we spoke in the last segment about mission, vision, and values, it's incredibly important to establish those to give people some framework to generate ideas for. I think, well, if you don't have that focus, one, the distractions can take all of your time away, and those distractions won't generate any forward movement. You also have to understand, too, without the mission, vision, values, and maybe the people, process, profit as being a foundation of where ideas are to be generated through, that the ideas that you may get from people may be more self-serving to their particular interests than they may be to your customers and company. So if you can focus on mission, vision, values, people, process, profit, it really creates the foundation for which people can create suggestions to. And if they don't meet those, then you won't have to be faced with those distractions, as you won't allow those to be introduced to the company. I think the second biggest lesson learned is that companies with integrity have a lot of opportunity for surviving, and companies without that integrity aren't given the second chance. And certainly through the dot-com revolution and the dot-com bomb, I think that our company, while we had some very sour times out there and some very difficult days, I think our coworkers and our customers understood that we were running this company with the highest level of integrity that we could. And they knew that we had their best interests in mind through this revolution that was taking place. And I think that our coworkers and our customers worked with us getting through this because they recognized that we are a company operating with integrity, and that we were there for them before, and that they were going to be there for us, and that they knew we'd be back for them down the road.
Great. Integrity is so critically important. You know, you've got to be able to lead by example, which basically means, it's your actions that determine how people will evaluate you, not what you talk about, because, as we all know, talk is cheap. Kevin, the next thing is, what advice would you give to a CEO or a business owner about how to lead their team and organization through difficult times?
Yeah, so that's another great question, Chris. So, in leading our company through the difficult times that I had, first and foremost, I did try to have compassion. And so I did try to have an open door, although I also had to avoid the distractions. And so when you had that open door and the compassion, you had to really go back to the mission, vision, and values, and making sure that as you're listening to people with compassion, that you're doing that compassion with some established rules. Elsewise, there was a risk that you were getting everyone's personal agenda, which may not have been in the best interest of the customers and the coworkers. So I think that, the compassion was definitely important, but it was compassion with an expectation of those who wanted to have conversations that compassion came with under some type of rules.
Okay. Kevin, you've mentioned several times about mission, vision, and values. What are the key values today at Bayshore Solutions?
Sure. So, first of all, our very first one is integrity. And, we have definitions to that, but integrity is our very first one. The second one we have is a commitment to win. We want to work with winners. We want to help our customers win, and we want to be winners together. A third is quality. We provide a service for a living, and we want to make sure that that quality service to our external customer and our internal customer, which is our coworkers, is always there. The fourth value we have is teamwork. What we do for a living is very complex, and there's an old saying, there's no I in team. And what we do, it takes many, many, many people to be able to design, develop, market, manage a website to generate an increase in cost-effective revenue. And so teamwork is a value. And the last one is innovation. In our industry, which is ever-changing, we need to constantly be innovative and creative in finding new and better ways to help our customers accomplish their goals.
Okay. Now, Kevin, I know one of the things that you do, I believe it's monthly, is you have town hall meetings with your employees.
That's correct.
How helpful are those sessions for you and your team?
Well, I think most companies, when you analyze most companies that are struggling, typically the number one reason you could typically attribute to the struggle is just lack of communication. So in having a town hall, it's a two-way interchange between the company and the coworkers. And some of it's very structure-driven. We manage our company with an open book scenario, so our employees are able to see all of our financial information. All of our company is what we call scorecard. And some of it's financial, some of it's not financial, but it's quantitative. And it's also an opportunity for our company to talk about what's on the horizon, what we see through innovation and opportunity, and have our team to be able to interject ideas too. And nothing's changed in the 11 or 12 years that it's been since the dot-com bubble burst and the ideas and foundation we set. People are allowed to bring ideas to the table, but it's got to understand our mission, vision, and values, and it's got to understand people, process, and profit. And so part of town hall is going over those ideas, and we have an we have an anonymous suggestion box that people can post those ideas, but it asks, how does this affect our mission, vision, values, people, process, profit? And then we review those openly amongst the whole team so people can have the confidence of posting that anonymously, but recognize that the company will read it word for word in town hall if it's submitted under the people, process, profit, and mission, vision, and values.
Okay, so for those of you who are listening, what you're hearing a leader, a CEO say is he's establishing the framework, he's establishing expectations, and he's living those expectations through his actions, and he's communicating that. I heard the words compassion today mentioned by Kevin, which were also mentioned last week when I talked about leadership with Colonel Gadsden from Fort Belvoir. So we're winding down here, Kevin, and I want to thank you for sharing with us what are some great ideas and useful information. And for those of you who are listening and for those of you who have tuned in late, there will be, in within 24 hours, a recorded version of this show that will be available on my show page. And Kevin, one more time, give us the URL and your email address.
Certainly. It's Bayshore Solutions, www.bayshoresolutions.com. And my email address is kevin@bayshoresolutions.com.
Great, Kevin. Thank you. Now, next week, everybody, my guest will be Andrew Sherman, who is author of the book Road Rules, Be the Truck, Not the Squirrel, Learn the 12 Essential Rules for Navigating the Road of Life. Now, I'm biased here. I've read this book twice, and I use it in some of my coaching, and I can't say enough about it. So if the title, Road Rules, Be the Truck, Not the Squirrel, doesn't get your attention, I don't know what else will help. Now, what I do in every show is I end it with one of my rants. And today I want to talk about those of you out there who like to wing it. And those of you who know me know exactly how I feel about winging it. The ability to successfully respond to challenges, and we heard them from Kevin today, either urgent or otherwise, in today's business climate, requires you to be both agile and resilient. And we talked about resiliency also last week with Colonel Gadsden. Some of you mistakenly call this winging it. Now, winging it means that you're always working on a never-ending list of tasks without a shred of strategy, purpose, or planning. It will never result in results or sustained long-term success. You look and act like an octopus on roller skates, a lot of erratic motion, but nothing consistent and no movement forward. Winging it only lasts so long before others see that your approach is shallow. Not only are you wasting your time and personal credibility assets, but winging it will eventually wear you and your team down, and you'll have nothing to show for your make-work efforts. You're building a house of cards with a ready-fire-aim strategy. Now, you skeptics out there are saying, geez, Chris, I'm good at winging it, so what's the big deal? The big deal is you're lucky. And you need to take a longer view at the possible damage your winging it is doing to your team and your company. It's only a matter of time before you encounter that one challenge where winging it will run you and your company into the ground. So in closing, for more information about my book and how to step up and play big, be sure to visit chrisruisi.com. When you get there, make sure to sign up for my Monday morning wake-up call. I guarantee you'll not be disappointed with the information there. A big thank you to my engineer, Matt, at Voice America for making me sound good and for making this show run smoothly. So thank you all for listening, and I look forward to being with you all again next week.
Thanks for tuning into the show, Step Up and Play Big, featuring Chris Ruisi, can be heard live every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Be sure to join us again next week.